Okay, we'll start with a question. Define chaos.
Inability to control anything.
Okay.
Void of organization, order, or structure.
Void of organization, order, or structure. Okay, that's good. Anything else?
Ability to predict anything.
I found that that's what chaos theory is on Wikipedia. It's interesting.
Just looked it up with my brain.
Nice work.
Good work. So disorganization and everything's everywhere. Craziness?
Yeah, craziness, disorganization. Okay. Anything else? I joked in my email today or this week that I hoped you were having a chaotic week, and several of you responded that you were. So this could come at a good time. The truth is that we live in a world of chaos on some level. We live where things in our world sometimes work, sometimes don't. There sometimes is a lack of obvious intention behind the way things happen, the way they don't happen. Sometimes that's a real problem because it's chaotic and our lives reflect it and we feel disorganized and scattered and crazy. Sometimes it's a problem because there's chaos underneath, but we're not aware of it or we're not willing to admit it. And so there can be a falseness that kind of show that an attempt to hide the chaos. What we're looking at tonight is kind of a season in the story that the Bible tells where things were fairly chaotic. And it comes at a bit of a surprising point in the biblical story. And we see both how it's chaotic, but also how God works in the midst of it. And in some ways, you could characterize the entire story of the Bible as a progression from chaos into order. That God is a God of ordering what is chaotic. It starts out in Genesis with God ordering the creation. And so the account in Genesis begins with the earth being formless and void, literally chaos. There's no organization, no order. And then God creates order. And in Genesis you see him separating and dividing and creating and ordering the world. But his order fails to stick, right? Something happens. And the world kind of degenerates into chaos. And the rest of the story is the story of God entering into that chaos and ordering it, slowly creating, fulfilling his promise to fulfill his original intention. So the question we're asking tonight is, how do we live in this world? How do we live in our lives that might be chaotic at times? And what we're trying to do through this series is kind of tell the whole biblical story, but also lay up our own lives kind of against that story and find the touch points. Where are the places where our lives line up with this season of the biblical story? And I think hopefully we've been finding and will continue to find that there are themes that parallel. I actually took a class, I remember this today, in college on Judaism. And the way the class worked is we went through kind of the history of Judaism throughout the quarter. But we also went through the history of a Jew. And so we started with like birth and circumcision and then the various rites that a Jewish person would go through. But those were kind of lined up with the history of Judaism as a whole. And there were all these kind of touch points. And it was a really fascinating way to teach a class. And I realized that's kind of what we're trying to do here. We're kind of trying to tell the whole story, but then look at our lives and say, each season of the biblical story reflects itself in our own lives. So that's hopefully what we've been seeing. So, just to kind of catch us up, we started off with creation. I'll remind you that there are these cards that if you want to be reading along, kind of following the schedule, you're welcome to do so. And on the back is my handy graphic that I spent very little time, of course, making, that kind of shows the progression of the biblical story. Starting with creation, God creates, and things immediately go downhill, right? His creation throws off their creator, and chaos ensues. But then God intervenes by calling. And so the second week we looked at the calling of Abraham and how God has a promise that he is going to call somebody. He calls Abraham, and then things go downhill. His people go into exile. His people go into Egypt. And then God sends Moses, and he calls them. He delivers them. That's what we looked at last week. He delivers them out of Egypt. There's these miraculous events, and then they wander the desert for 40 years. And then they finally get it together, and they enter the promised land, and they start conquering, and Joshua leads them in these conquests, and then comes the period of the judges. So you can see how the story kind of, you think things are going to come together, and then it dips again. And so in a sense, what we see tonight, this idea of chaos comes as a surprise. We just got out of Egypt. We just came into the promised land. You might think, this is it. This is where the promise of God is going to come true. Things are finally going to work. We are in the land that God promised Abraham centuries earlier, 5 or 6 centuries earlier. And then there's this odd season of the judges. So the judges is basically described in several places as not a very nice time to live. At the end of the book of Judges, in chapter 21, verse 25, this is how the book of Judges concludes itself. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. So this is kind of the idea of describing this as a chaotic time. This was a time in Israel's history where there wasn't a central ruler, there wasn't a central gathering point, and people did kind of whatever they wanted to do. And yet we're going to see how God enters that tonight. So let me pray for us as we get started. God, we just come tonight asking for you to show us a little more of who you are. We'd ask you to help us to grasp this big picture of the story you're telling in Scripture, of how you relate to the world, of how you enter into our world to create and redeem. And tonight we especially want to see how you enter into a world of chaos and what that means for us, how you enter into our lives and how you might invite us and ask us and send us into the lives of others to confront chaos and to find you at work amidst it. So help us to see those things. Help us to see you. Help us to learn from it. In Jesus' name, amen. So I'm going to be reading from Judges 6 tonight. This was one of the readings that you did, if you're following along. And this is the story of Gideon, who is one of the judges that God appoints. The word judges actually is kind of an odd word. It actually has a little more of a generic sense in Hebrew of kind of leader or ruler. Judging would be part of that, but to think it's not a judge like black robes and gavel behind a bench type judge. It's kind of a judge as a leader. And the judges in this period were often military leaders and military victors that rose to power. So I'm going to read verses 1 to 10 to get us started. This is Judges 6. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep, nor cattle, nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count the men and their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet who said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out from the land of slavery. I snatched you from the power of Egypt and from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them from before you and gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live. But you have not listened to me. So this is kind of a bleak picture. God's people are in the land that God has promised to them, and yet they're not living the dream, really, right? They're hiding in caves. They're building little shelters for themselves. Every time they plant something, somebody else comes in and ravages it, steals all their livestock. This is not what they expected when God said, I'll send you into the land. And what we see throughout the Old Testament, this is going to come up week after week. The Old Testament is basically the story of a promise that doesn't look very promising. God makes these promises to his people, and yet at every turn it looks like this isn't going to work. We're never really going to see the outcome of this promise. So God promises to Abraham, and Abraham goes and runs off to Egypt and hides in Egypt. God promises to Moses, and Moses says, I can't do it. God promises to his people leaving Egypt, and they say, we'd rather worship a golden calf. At every turn, it looks like somehow these promises that are given to God's people of provision and land and care aren't going to come true. I think we can resonate with that because we know we have promises from God. We know what he's said about caring for us, about being real to us, about guiding us. And yet it seems like time and time again, we come across things in our lives where it seems like those promises are pipe dreams. Where it seems like this promise isn't really for real. It's not going to come true. There's no way that what I'm going through right now could possibly lead to what God says he has in store for me. And this is what the Israelites would be feeling at this time. They'd be feeling like we're living in the land, but this is not what we thought it was going to be. Now the thing is, like I said earlier, there's kind of two ways of dealing with this that we usually do. The first way is that we admit, you know, our lives are chaotic. Things aren't working out. We don't know what to do. We kind of throw up our hands. And that's kind of the harder way to see your life. Like I said, several of you emailed me back and said, yeah, I am having a chaotic week, actually. So sometimes we admit, like, things are chaotic. But I think in this area, it's probably more common that people try to cover it. That people say, well, yeah, maybe my life's kind of busy and hectic, but I've got it under control. I think we do that as Christians. I think we can pretend or work really hard to pull it all together, try to keep on top of things, keep a good attitude. I think our world does that. The people we know and work with and are friends with, just trying to kind of keep the ball moving, keep the system working. So one of the first things I think that we can see from this passage is that one of the things we can do is just recognize that we live in chaos. We can give up trying to make sense of it all. We can give up trying to stay on top of everything and just kind of admit that on some core level, things just don't work. On some core level, this world is disordered, it's broken. Doesn't mean there's not beautiful parts to it, but there's something chaotic about the world we live in. There's something chaotic about our lives. There's something disordered. And it all begins by kind of recognizing it, by recognizing here we are living in caves, living in clefts of rocks. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. This isn't the way God promised it. This isn't what I was created for. And a lot of people are just hesitant to admit that because unless you see a path forward, unless you have some hope, it's really hard to say where I am isn't a good place. Because nobody likes to be without hope. And so we think we can manage it. We think we can take care of our lives. People we know think that things are fine. They kind of make as if everything's okay. Most of you know we have 3 biological kids, and now we have 2 foster kids that we're hoping to adopt, and they're all between 5 and 8. So our house is fairly chaotic. It's a pretty good description of our house. And pretty much the goal, like almost every day, is keep the house looking normal. You know, like, I mean, if you like take your hand off of things for like an hour, the house just devolves into complete chaos. Toys everywhere, things everywhere, kids running, hanging off things. And so, like, the basic goal every day is minimize the chaos, control the chaos, keep things running smoothly. And I basically know when I get home, like, I can look at the living room and say, this has been a good day or this has been a terrible day. Because the physical layout of the place, like, reveals how things have gone, right? If things are picked up, if kind of the counter's clean, then I know things have probably gone pretty well, it's been a good day. But if there's stuff everywhere, I know that chaos has won today. And it has not been a good day. So the kind of constant goal is keep it running, keep everything under control, keep the house okay. And I think in some ways we just live our lives that way. We're just kind of trying, you know, keep things at our job functioning, keep our relationships okay, keep our families happy, keep everything just fitting in, and we're just sometimes are overcome with this desire of just keeping it running. Hold off the chaos as long as you can. Hold it at bay. And in some ways, I think God calls us to something deeper than that. To recognize that we live amidst chaos. And to say, God, we need you. And this is actually what the Israelites do here. In verse 6, we read, Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. Finally, you can imagine God saying, they've cried out to me. They've realized they need help. This is actually the same word that was used last week when we looked at the Israelites in Egypt for 400 years, and it said they cried out to the Lord to notice them, and God did. So the first thing we can kind of see from our own lives with this biblical story is that we need to recognize the chaos. We need to see it in our lives, and we need to see it in the lives of the people around us. Let's keep reading. We'll pick up in verse 11. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." But sir, Gideon replied, "If the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about? When they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian." The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" What was Gideon doing?
Trying to make bread.
Trying to make bread, okay? How is he pictured?
Someone who's innocent.
Innocent?
Huh? It's like, why do you pick me? That's not my job.
He's hiding.
He's hiding. Yeah. Where is he threshing his wheat?
Some basement somewhere.
Some basement somewhere, in a wine press. You know how you thresh wheat? You have a little pitchfork, right? And you have a pile of wheat, and you take it, and you throw it up in the air, and the wind comes, and it blows off the light stuff, and the good stuff, the grain, falls. How well does it work to thresh wheat inside? Not very well, right? He's hiding from the Midianites. He's trying to thresh wheat the best he can, hiding in a wine press because the world around him is just too chaotic. He can't deal with it, so he's hiding. And God comes to him and he says, "You, mighty warrior, God is with you." And he's probably thinking, "Mighty warrior? I'm hiding in a wine press underground, trying barely to manage my own wheat. I'm not much of a warrior, God. And if you're with me, by the way, now that you mention it, why has all this terrible stuff happened to us? Why am I in a wine press and not out under my own tree, living in my land? If you're really with us, why are things as bad as they are? Our fathers told us these great stories. You saved them from Egypt. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But look at me now. If you're really real, if you're really with me, why is this happening to me now?" I think we can resonate with those questions sometimes. I think there are times where we feel like, "God, if you're real, if your promises are real, I wouldn't be feeling the things I'm feeling right now. I wouldn't be lonely. I wouldn't be sad. I wouldn't be caught in sin that I am. I wouldn't be, whatever, frustrated, hopeless, depressed." I love this line. "God, if you're with us, why has all this happened to us?" I think we know that question. Does God answer Gideon's question?
Not really.
Gideon asks a couple questions. Why has all this happened? Where are all these wonders? What's going on? God doesn't answer that question. He says, "Go. Go in the strength you have." Whatever strength you have, you may not realize it. You may be hiding because you think you're afraid, but go in the strength you have. Aren't I sending you? Aren't I capable to send you into this chaos, to send you to overcome it? So God just says, "I am with you. Go." And I think this is what we can do a lot of times. We can hide. We can hide from the chaos in our own lives. We can pretend it's not there. But one of the things we're particularly good at doing as Christians sometimes is hiding from the chaos in our world, right? We can kind of create our own little wine press, and we can go thresh our wheat where nobody can see us, and we can just go to church and come to YAF and go to all the church things, and we might have to go out into the world because we need to make some money, but then we can rush back into the church setting, and, you know, we can just stay safe. We can hide ourselves, protect ourselves from the chaos of the world because we don't know what to do about it. But God says to Gideon, "Go. Go in the strength you have. Am I not sending you? I'm sending you into the chaos." And this whole period that we're looking at, this period of the judges, is a period of this happening over and over again. This is probably what characterizes this episode in the biblical story. The world's a mess. God's people have turned away. So God calls a person to lead bravely into the chaos and overcome it. Those are the judges. God raises up leaders and sends them into this chaos to bring God's presence into it. You know, sometimes there's kind of this conflict we feel between, like, church activities that we do, all this church stuff, and, like, non-church activities. You know, there might be friends that we have that go see movies or go out at night or do other things, and it can feel like, well, you know, I'm supposed to do the church things. There's all these church activities and I should do those. And that's useful and that's good. And part of the reason, as Liam said, why we gather here is because we are a family. We're called to gather, but we're also called to disperse. We're also called to be sent into the world. I had this conflict a lot in college because I was part of a fellowship. And I remember one weekend in particular, my fellowship was going on a retreat for a weekend, and my dorm was going on the ski trip. So, you know, I was very spiritual in college, and I thought, do I want to go, like, study the Bible all weekend or go skiing? And I thought, well, of course, like, the good Christian thing to do is to go on the retreat, because, you know, you're supposed to do things like that, because that's what Christians do. But going skiing sounds really fun, and I love the people I live with, and I had this conflict, like, church stuff or world stuff? And this type of thing repeated over and over again. I think that particular time I chose to go on the retreat. I mean, the ski trip. But part of it is we can judge these things, right? We think that the church stuff is better because we're supposed to do stuff with church, but sometimes our goal can be to hide from the world. Our goal can be to escape it. And God says, am I not sending you? Am I not sending you into the things? So sometimes going skiing is more spiritual, is more kind of following God's leading than going to some church event. Sometimes going out with your friends from work, going out after work for drinks or dinner or something, or seeing a movie with them. Sometimes that's where God is calling us. Now, you know, I certainly love you coming to YAF, and my paycheck kind of depends on it in some way. So I'm not saying don't come to YAF, but sometimes we can huddle too much. And sometimes that's a fear of the chaos, because the chaos is real and it's scary, and they ravage our sheep and they burn our crops and we don't know what to do about it, so we're just going to play it safe. God says, don't hide. Go. So it continues, verse 16. Verse 15. Gideon asks a question. But Lord, Gideon asked, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. The Lord answered, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together. We're going to stop there. So Gideon asks a legitimate question, right? I'm no mighty warrior. Here I am hiding from these Midianites. How am I going to do anything? My clan is the weakest of the weakest. I'm the weakest of all of them. What am I going to do? Does God answer this question of Gideon's? What?
Not really.
More so than the last one, though. Before God answered, where... Gideon asked, where are you, God? Why is all this happening? He's asked questions of why, right? Why does my life look this way? Why does the life of Israel look so terrible? God doesn't answer that question. And in my experience, it's rare that God answers questions of why for us. Those are some of the hardest questions we ask God, but he doesn't often answer them. But then Gideon asks a second type of question. He says, how? How am I going to save Israel? How am I going to do this? I'm nothing. And how does God say? What's that?
You said it.
It said, with me is what God replied.
Yeah, with me. I'm going to go with you. I'll be on your team. This is how you're going to do it. You might be the weakest, you might be the smallest, but I'm coming with you. This is how it's going to work. And Gideon ends up kind of starting off hard. Gideon, if you read, continue on in the story, he tests God a bunch of times, right? Gideon is the one who does the fleece. You know, if the fleece is wet, then I'll go. But if it's wet, he says, well, let me try one more time. If the ground's dry and the fleece, he kind of keeps testing God. He's not quite sure. He's not quite willing to bet everything. But once he finally crosses that line, Gideon becomes a faithful judge of Israel. He leads God's people. He defeats the Midianites. He saves Israel, as God said he would. So part of our task is to see how we can enter into the chaos of our world. We can ask, how is God sending me into this world? What does he want from me? How does my life look different? What is it about God's presence with me that allows me to enter into a chaotic world and bring God into it, to bring his presence into my workplace, my family, my personal life? How do we invite God into the chaos? The truth is that we have something to offer our world. I think one of the biggest challenges of living in this area, being in an area where most people are very successful, most people generally have their lives together, is that most people don't feel like they need to be saved. They're not at the place that Israel was. They're not crying out to God. They're not aware of the chaos in their own lives. That they think they're kind of on top of it. And so one of the most dangerous things I think that we can be led to believe is we don't have anything for them. You know? They're doing fine. People in our world, they've got their way, we've got ours. Everybody's happy. But that's not acknowledging the chaos that's in our world. And that's one of the reasons we don't even try to bring God into the chaos, because we don't think they need God. There's no evidence. Because most of us, and I say us because we're included in this a lot of the time, are really good at keeping it all together and managing. And sometimes that's how God uses pain in our lives, uses struggle, to break through that facade for us, to break through the effort to keep it together. So one of the questions we can ask is, how do we bring God into this world? How do we even help people to acknowledge the chaos? How do we be brave enough not to hide from it? And then how do we invite God? How do we go in the strength that God gives us? So the story of the Bible, the story that God tells, is the story of God himself, of what he's doing in the world. He creates the world. He calls his people. He delivers them. And you might think, then it's going to get good, right? He's just delivered them. But then things go down into chaos. And yet we see this picture of God time and time again choosing somebody to enter into that chaos and save people from it, to bring God into the chaos. These judges end up being foreshadows of the king that God will send. The kings end up being foreshadows of the Messiah that God will eventually send. These are little pictures of individuals that God raises up to send into the chaos, and that ends up getting fulfilled when Jesus comes on the scene. So all of these pictures here are pointing towards something, and that's Jesus, and we all live after that. And so God raises these people up to foreshadow Jesus, and he sends us out in Jesus' steps to be like him, to do what Jesus did. Jesus, once and for all, entered into the world to conquer the chaos. And now we're part of this church. That's what the church is. The church enters the chaos to bring Christ into it, not to hide from it, but to see God at work in the midst of it.